This is Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for rolling. What's up, Travis?
Living the dream, hoping it's mine.
Living the dream, hoping it's mine. Right on, right on. We were in here last week talking about The Prophet, and I wanted to do a little something different this week. And it being Juneteenth and everything, you know, I really wanted to keep our appointment and like talk a little bit about your time in Jamaica, you know, the diaspora. Jamaica and Haiti and the Caribbean, the Bahamas, I mean, that was the gateway to the New World for the colonizers. And a lot of maroon movements and black liberation happened down there in not the most nonviolent way, you know. And so I'm just wondering if you had experienced any learning experiences among the Rastafarians there and the dreads.
Definitely. I mean, it was when I was there, they were coming out of some pretty hard times, but the things that were learned during that time about the sources of tension, and it opens up a deeper level of conversation. You can't just talk about what you don't want. You also have to talk about what you dream of wanting. And it just felt there's like an electricity behind it. You know, the Marcus Garvey movement, powerful, empowering people who were in need of upliftment, but also came with the bitter pill at the same time. And the talk of that, like people who had been, who had decided to, you know, reintegrate into African society only to find out it wasn't exactly what they had hoped for, not exactly what they had dreamed. And it's because, you know, politics and economy and all those things, they're kind of everywhere and come with their good and bad. And so the realization that he has some funkiness to him as well, like he's anti-liberal, socialist, so to speak, had worked with the KKK because they're also about racial purity. And that really leaves out a huge chunk of the population in even those times. I mean, a lot of Jamaica is part Dutch. Bob Marley's father is Dutch, you know, and so it's kind of hard to cut off a section and say, well, this is where we're at, but you're not there. And, you know, that seems to be everywhere, the levels.
Extremism breeds extremism.
Yes, it's a mess.
It's that pendulum effect. You know, you're faced with someone who's on the far end of one side, and sometimes they can push you to take a stance on the way other end just out of spite or self-preservation.
Self-preservation's a big one. Survival's a big one. You know, I've seen people have to really deny themselves and their character just to keep their job.
Yeah.
They cannot be who they want to be because of their environment. And that's like, for me, that's like burning in hell.
Yes. I mean, it's true. It makes me flinch and cringe just thinking about it. And cringe on the fringe. That's why I'm out here. I mean, it's and self-employed. It's really hard to think about a life. You know, some of the speeches that I played in the last hour were not by any means necessary, but definitely will have to do what I have to do to be free. You know what I mean? And to me, that's truth. That's self-love. And that's manifestation of all that I am by the creator put here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of people in my family ask me why I chose to go to Jamaica. The reason would be, you know, introduction to reggae music, but also the realization that you don't learn history from those who are experiencing it from the outside. You know what I mean? Like, it seems that you know, well, we know history is taught in this country in a certain light because it's meant to spin a certain rhetoric towards a certain people. And you don't find out about the world and how it works until you get out in it. Talk to those who have had the experience, because you can only talk to experience.
I run into that quite a bit in my own mind, where I was on here on Thursday with James, the Music Man, on his show, Southern Accents, and he asked me to come on his Juneteenth show. And I had a bit of anxiety because I'm like, what's going to happen on there? Is he going to ask me a bunch of things about Juneteenth and I need to come up with some book knowledge? You know, even on my own show, I put myself up against that. Will people believe what I'm saying unless I have the footnotes? And the truth is, someone told me, all you got to do is be you. Like, just be you. My experience in life, yes. That the Black experience is my Black experience, you know, and what my mother and grandmothers and fathers instilled in me and what I know about their triumphs and traumas. And I don't necessarily have read XYZ. I haven't read a bunch of Baldwin. I know enough to respect the uncle. And, you know, I haven't read Angela Davis, but I've heard her voice. You know what I mean? Because we all learn and receive in different ways. Leaving behind those textbooks that were misinforming us in school, you know, and just getting out here and living life. I know what racism is because I live here in Black skin. And I think a lot of white people know what racism is because they live out here in white skin. And I don't know what you are. You just tan and conscious. He's telling me you white, man, but I still don't believe you.
I'm solid mutt.
You know, how were you accepted in Jamaica?
I was very welcomed there. I was very welcomed in Latin America. And we gravitate towards where that feeling's at, where you feel accepted, where you can walk into a room and you're not like having to fight some kind of presumption. And in those cultures, there's just a lot less of it. It comes with affluence, the presumptions. You know what I mean? So when you are in a farming community anywhere on the world, you know that's a poor community. The affluence is not there. They're not going to look at your shoes and say anything. You know, you can wear clothes with holes in them and there's no strange thought about it or whatever, you know, and that feels very free and it can change the energy of conversations to feel welcome, you know, but to feel the other things too, to feel it all really. But for me, it wasn't about like, oh, I'm going to find the most dangerous place to be right now because, you know, it didn't feel like that at all. It felt like something calling me through the lyrics of reggae. And for me to understand the creator in a different light through someone else's perspective and to see the richness of a history that's experienced so many different changes. And I'm so thankful for being able to leave the bubble. There's nothing like travel and social activity to really destroy a lot of the blocks that we carry around in our own minds, presumptions.
Yes. In my own experience, I had a bit of a flip side where I was introduced in my youth to punk rock before I was introduced to reggae. And I felt this kinship to the white kids in my school through punk rock music. I'm like, yes, like this system is unjust. Like, yes, let's overthrow it. Yes, let's like bash our heads into each other, our bodies into each other and our fists in the air. You know what I mean? And it's like being one of the only Black people in that community, I still felt really welcomed and associated through values, shared values, you know. So growing up in Washington, D.C. and having that be a true melting pot, I got to know people from all different backgrounds, you know, immigrant, United States born, black, white, Asian, you know, Hispanic, all of it. And yeah, I know what you mean. You know, this just to experience the music with other people. And something else that got me as a youth was my grandparents used to take me down when I was itty bitty to Lynchburg, Virginia, to visit my grandmother's family down there. And my grandmother's family that she was raised by was white, but my grandmother is brown skinned. Even though my mom and my grandfather are really light, my grandmother and I are about the same complexion. And so when I got down there at, you know, 8 years old, seeing these white kids, and my grandma would trip out, you know, that's your family. Can you believe that's your cousin? Can you believe? So that's where, you know, even before, I wasn't scared of these white kids listening to punk rock in my high school. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, we're all related. Like, yes. You know, and I was in the 90s with the United, you know, Benetton thing was going on and this and that. And so I'm like, yes, let's unite, you know. And my grandmother being raised also in West Virginia. And that white side of the family, you know, the Appalachian, the mountains and this whole aspect of, I meet people now and they act like Appalachia is just exclusively a white club. And it's like, no, man, we, you know, it's not. Like, people were all in those mountains together because they were all poor together. You know what I mean? So it's really eye-opening, and I want people to really understand that when you get out of what TV or the movies is trying to portray to you, or the music industry, even the way they segregate and stole things and then try to give it to one group. That's white music. That's black music. I mean, they started that a long time ago, but it's not true, man. We were all out there together in certain aspects, especially in the poorest parts of this country.
Right. And they don't want you to see that.
No, they've killed the leaders, especially like they played some Dr. King in the last hour. And we talked about Dr. King and he was nonviolent, and they found him such a threat, mm-hmm. you know, to threaten him, to bomb his home, to have federal actions against him, federal files on him. And he was nonviolent. And that's the biggest threat.
Yeah. One of my favorite artists, Lucky Dubé, back in the day, got to see some concerts. Incredible. In the same shot. Peter Tosh has been shot. Bob Marley's been shot. I mean, It's powerful. It's powerful to let go of racism. It's powerful for the people. It's not powerful for those who are in control. They need those divisions in place. And that's why our enemies reinforce them to us on the internet through Facebook and all the things. They want us fighting each other for some reason. But, you know, the things that we can come together on, music, work. You know, when I was working in Jamaica, they, you know, there was some moments where they're like, you got to come with us to the cane field. And at first I thought, this is crazy. You know, I don't know anything about this. Well, they just wanted to show me that how amazing they were at their job, you know, and to watch me go downhill trying to do it was hilarious. And I provided entertainment for a full day and I thought I was strong. And I got wiped out. And then suddenly they met me on my side. And I'm building with sticks and wood and things in my yard. And, you know, suddenly two guys show up and they just want to watch and see and be involved. One of them asks me, they're like, what do they call your type of guy? Where you come from? And I told him, well, they call me a redneck. And he turns to his friend and he's like, where he comes from, we're all rednecks.
I love that. I love that. How did you get along with the patois? Like, how long did it take you?
It was a trick, but not unlike the language that we create here. There's something to it. There's a name for it. I forget what it is. You know, Marcus Garvey was known for it too. Like, being able to create words. People knew on the fly that just kind of came from They sounded more like what you were trying to say than the actual words.
Yes, the phonics. You know,
the phonics.
Yes.
And there's things that we do here in New Mexico that are not dissimilar to that, but you have to be quick wit to catch it.
Yes.
You know, because it's not the same even from neighborhood to neighborhood. You know, it almost has an identity depending on, you know, what's happening. So, for instance, in New Mexico, I've heard words like strategy. You know what I mean? And that's like strategy and tragedy in one word. And you could just feel it, you know? Seems like a really good idea, but it wasn't.
Yes. You know? I love that. And there's a ton of that in the patois. Mm-hmm. You know, overstand and understand.
Yes, that is part of a movement called Word Sound Power.
Yes.
And that was powerful back then, and it's still, I mean, words mean something. Back in the George Bush days, they were going to try to stop saying the word Palestinian, and that's how they were going to win. And it was powerful. People saw it from the beginning and were like, uh-uh, occupied people, no, they're Palestinians, you know. And so words mean something. So I. That is an acknowledgement of one blood. You know what I mean? Like, if we keep separating ourselves by this boundary, we're not going to see ourselves as one and be able to move as one and have the power that you have as one. You're just seeing humanity as one block. And so they would change words like universe into iniverse. You know what I mean? Because anything with the U sound in it brought about that feeling of you, when I is the goal.
Yeah. Like the U being separation.
Yes.
And I is I plus I, that we are each individual, but we are each the same. We're
politricksters.
Equal. Yes, politics.
Shrivelization. I could go on. I mean, it's like words are powerful. And they were playing with it like putty when I was there. And it was fun. It was a way to kind of like, you have to have some humor as well in life. The panic will eat you alive. But Black and Latino cultures have an amazing way of finding humor in the darkest of places, and it's medicine.
Yes, that's it. My mom would always say, "You got to laugh to keep from crying." Because I'm like, "Why? It's not funny." It's like, "Got to laugh to keep from crying. It'll be okay. It'll be okay." I saw an influencer on the other day. She was Native American, Indigenous, and she was like, "You know, people use words like resilient." To and wise and to describe us. Don't forget we're funny too.
Another one I was exploring the other day is weaponized love language. This is a common theme in religion where they'll invoke the word love that's, you know, universally accepted. You can't really fight against it. So then the things that they do to you because they love you.
Yeah. Yeah, I beat you because I love you.
Yes,
I'm doing all of this because I love you.
Weaponization of love language.
Yeah. I wrote down a line. I believe it was the Muta Baruka. Yeah, any which way, freedom. Food, clothes, and shelter have no politics. You know, and it's interesting out in the world, we see people and they're like, oh, I don't want to talk about politics or your politics, that politics. It's like, I'm talking about basic human rights.
Right.
That's it. What is politics? I don't even know. That's why it's politics, right?
Right.
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction. They want to talk like it's not what they believe, but what is it?
Yeah, what you believe in
what is
without
it?
A conscience and no compassion for another human being is really you believe.
Right.
Capitalism is, I think.
Capitalism. If I build a fence around a coconut tree, that would cause you to steal from me. Another line from a Muta Baruka song.
Man, it's fire. So we're going to promise to do this again because everything that we played was amazing. And then we're not going to get to People's Court Part 2, but they had Columbus come bust us.
Oh, man.
Come bust us on trial. Say something about
that. If anyone
that
needs some satisfaction, listen to that one.
Yes.
You know, because if you're feeling any of this, that one is kind of like a, it kind of sets the scene as if there's a judge, and then you have religious denomination and what was the other one? I forget.
We have Mr. Religious Belief and Mr. Denomination.
Yes. Divisions.
Yes. You taught black people to pray with their eyes closed.
You even put sin on sex.
Yes.
Mary was a virgin her
whole life. And that was the part where, and this is going on right now when we're looking at the wars that we're imposing on the Middle East. The colonizer is using themes like women's rights to justify blowing up millions of women and children and men. You know, like, oh, they look at how bad their women have it. We need to liberate all of them. Liberation comes with a bomb. You know, aid comes with a bomb. Like, how are you freeing them when you're treating the people and the women here just as bad or worse as they're being treated over there? I haven't really heard of any women over there being used as human incubators and kept alive to, so that, you know, look what's going on in, or went on in Georgia till that woman finally died.
Because it's not about freeing the women. It never has been.
It's about letting loose the bombs. We got just about 30 seconds or so. What you want to say to the people?
Oh, just be authentic today.
And
tomorrow.
We refuse to be what they wanted us to be.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, sing it with me. We are what we are.
That's the way.
That's the way it's going to be. If you don't know.
Yeah, we already won. That's what they don't know.
That's it. You know, we are eternal. We're just going to.
This is the final footsteps and kicks of the dying bull, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we're watching.
Yeah. That's it. All right, look it up. In the cab. Radio and Linktree. Get all the links and be in touch with me. And always, speak life. Love you. KMRDLP, Madrid, New Mexico. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.